And when you say that the shir is sponsored in honor of the one who gives the shir and in honor of Yerushalayim, you realize that's not exactly the same. Like, one is far more important than the other. But it's close. But I will say as follows, that we live in a very special time. We live in a time that after 2,000 years, we have to try to explain to our children what Tisha B'Av is. That's much harder to explain why we're mourning. I'm not saying that there's everything is here, but I'm saying it's an educational challenge to explain Tisha B'Av, and Yom Yerushalayim is not an educational challenge. And the very fact that people spontaneously, innately understand why we should be celebrating Yom Yerushalayim, again, just with this contrast with Tisha B'Av, I think is really, says all that needs to be said. Okay, we start a new book this week, Sefer Bamidbar. And we're told in the very beginning there's a census. And from the census, we're going to move into formations. Into formations, we're going to move into marching. And we're going to start moving, which means we have preparations right now for taking leave of Har Sinai. Of course, as some of us know, because we cheated and we've snuck ahead, we look at the end of the book to see how it ends. I know some of you, every year, it's like it's brand new. But there's really two objectives. One objective is to leave Sinai. The other objective is to get to Eretz Yisrael. And as far as leaving Sinai, that seems to be a little bit easier. I mean, we accomplished that fairly quickly in this book. But as far as actually getting to the land of Israel, for some reason, that does not work out. At least it does not. Again, I'm sorry if I'm ruining Sefer Bamidbar for you, but it does not work out in Sefer Bamidbar. But let's realize that the leaving and the destination really are connected together, but it's still, there's this going to be the sense of movement taking place now. So in order to move, when you have hundreds of thousands of people, then you need there to be some kind of formation, order, or otherwise things get quite chaotic. So, at first is the census, and we're told as follows, V'yedaber Hashem el Moshe b'bin Mer Sinai ba'ol moed b'chad l'chodesh hasheni b'shana hasheni l'tzeitam yeretz Mitzrayim le'mor. So we have the exact time frame for this, as opposed to almost all of Sefer Vayikra, when time was unimportant. Now we are immediately given a time frame, and that is in the second year, the second month after they left Egypt. Se'u et rosh kol adap b'nei Yisrael l'mishpachotam l'beit avotam b'mispar shemot kol zachar l'gugulotam. We're going to start counting them, have a census in order to create order. Mi'ben esrim shana v'mala kol yotzei tzava b'Yisrael tefkidu otam l'tzvotam atav aron. And then there's this phrase there, which some of us may find a little difficult, but let's be real. It tells us about the destination. It says we're going to start counting from the age of 20 upwards those who are of the age of going to the army. And then the whole fact that a military is being mentioned at this point is because, yes, we are supposed to enter into the land. You enter into the land, maybe one which will have incident, and therefore we need to start getting organized. V'itchemiyu ish ish l'mate ish rosh l'veit avotam hu. And aside from the people who you will count, you will be aided in this by heads of the various tribes. And here are the names of the heads of the tribes, and the only function at this point is that they are going to help you count in order to create the census and so on. And the only thing that I want to pay attention to now is going to be the order of the tribes that are mentioned. And we start off in an unsurprising way: Reuven, Shimon, Yehuda. So we skipped already one, we skipped Levi. Liasar Zvulun, so that's also interesting, because what we just now did is we went straight on the Leah line. All five of those mentions were Leah, so Leah has six children. Of the six, all five were mentioned in proper sequence right now, with skipping out one, namely skipping out Levi. And then it goes over to Levet Yosef, Ephraim, Menashe, and Binyamin, where Ephraim and Menashe are put before Binyamin. So that already is interesting, because Yosef has disappeared. I know you'll tell me, but Ephraim and Menashe are from Yosef. But again, this is interesting, because now we do have Ephraim and Menashe. And on top of that, we have Ephraim coming before Menashe. So what is our second group? Our second group, I know that you don't see them as being separate, because you just had five and now another three. But the first group was a Leah group, and the second group is a Rachel group. From there, it moves on. L'Dan, Asher, Gad, and Naphtali. So who are they? Dan, Asher, Gad, and Naphtali. So first of all, we may be confused a little bit with sequence right now. What we have over here are the others. When I say the others, these are the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, whatever status they may have had. And then it tells us at the end, and Levi won't be counted. So over here, it's just the way that we're being presented with them, which seem to be, again, I don't want to talk about importance or significance, but the way that they're being put is we are dividing in terms of some kind of an order, and the order was not the one that perhaps we would have expected. I remember at one point I gave a shiur looking at every single time the tribes are mentioned in the book of Bamidbar, and there is a lack of consistency how they're mentioned, but over here I think we understand right away what the order is, even though when it comes to the last four there is what to note, because it is what exactly the order is at the in terms of the last four, but let's at least note what we have is Leah, Rachel, Shvachot. And then of course Levi is put on the side. We're told in the second part of the first source, starting later on, we're skipping all the way to Pasuk Nun Bet, V'chanu b'nei Yisrael ish al machanehu v'ish al diglo l'tzivotam, that when it comes to the formation of the encampment, they will be each person by their tribe, each person by their degel. Now, degel in modern terms, it would be flag, but Rashi over here says Ve'ish al diglo in source number two, Kimoshe digalim sdurim b'sefrizeh shlosha shvatim l'kol degel. So what he tells us is that this is, you know, in the military you have smaller units and larger units. Over here what you have is groups of three tribes will be considered to be one degel. By the way, it doesn't necessarily tell us what the word degel means, but it tells us what the function of the degel is. The function of the degel now is going to be, aside from taking all of Am Yisrael, first let's divide them into the tribes. Tribal affiliation is important. So therefore we have a division of 12. Second is, we're going to now divide those 12 into groups of three. So now we realize we will have four groups of three in terms of the formation of the way that they will be encamped. We will find out as we continue that not only is this for encampment, but this is also going to be the way that they're going to march. So therefore, when they move, they're also going to move within these particular groups. You can look at source number three. Kol ha-pikudim le-machane Yehuda rishana yisahu, which means over here, the 12 tribes have now been broken up into four groups, and the four groups have names, and the four names are the names of the leaders of each one of those four groups. So what are the names of those groups? The first one is the Yehuda group. I'll break it down for you soon. Who is in the Yehuda group? Yehuda group is going to be the first one to go. The second group in Pasuk Tet Zayin is the Reuven group. They're going to be the second ones to go. The third group will be the Ephraim group, and they will be the third ones to go, and the fourth group will be the Dan group, and they will be the last ones to go. So when we noticed in terms of the sequence of how the various tribes are mentioned, what we have then, one of the groups is the Reuven group, and Reuven is mentioned first. Afterwards, we have the Yehuda group, and he's going to be... let me put it this way. When we wonder why Binyamin is mentioned after Menashe, and Menashe is mentioned after Ephraim, we now realize that Ephraim is the name of that group. And when we wonder why Dan may be, although that's not such a big question, Dan of Telegad Asher, Dan was the first, the son of Bilhah, but Dan is going to be the name of that last group, and therefore he's mentioned first. So therefore, the division of the tribes, hopefully this made some sense, will help us understand the sequence of what the names were being told, which means there was a little foreshadowing there in terms of the division of four camps will help us in terms of the way that they were mentioned over here. Although the camps themselves are not completely clear to us, and I skipped over those psukim because, again, I didn't want to read everything, but I will break down the various camps for you. What we have is, if we'll start with Yehuda, Yehuda has with him Yisachar and Zvulun, and that was considered to be the first camp. We have Reuven, and Reuven has with him Shimon and Gad, so over there we need to figure out what that grouping is. Ephraim has with him Menashe and Binyamin, and we can easily understand what that is. And then Dan has with him Asher and Naphtali. Now, just in case it's easier for some of you to look at a visual of this, on the last page, I don't know how well my beautiful colored picture came out. All of you who are on my email list and received the sources already earlier in the week would have received the colored email, and you can go back and consult that. So here we have a very good sense of how they were set up. The one on the east, the Mizrach, Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun, and let's understand who they are for a moment. This is a group of all Leah children. Of course, there are three other Leah children who are missing. Who are the other three that are missing? Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Which means the first three Leah children are missing. But Levi gets removed from the equation, and we'll come back to Levi soon. After Levi gets removed, and Shimon and Levi get removed, so let's now skip over to the other one. We have Shimon, we have Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. So Reuven, Shimon, and Gad is a very interesting group of people, because this is all also Leah, but Leah in a larger sense, because now God has slipped in as the third, and who is God? God is from Zilpah, and therefore what we now have is, shall we call it, the children of Leah who have been displaced. And the reason why I'm saying displaced is because Reuven gets, he loses some of his status. And who does he lose his status to? He loses his status, apparently, to Yosef. Shimon is somebody who gets himself into trouble, which, by the way, together with Levi, and we will come back to that as well. And what we have then is what I would call the Leah contingent in its broader sense, but there is some, I think you would understand it as a perceived slap in the face to Reuven and Shimon, because now they have been placed together with the sons, with a son of one of the concubines, which means, you know, when you go back and think about some of the tension that had existed between the children of, well, we first learn about it by Yosef. We learn that Yosef does something with the children of the concubines, of the Bnei Apilakshim, and the way that it's understood by the Midrash is that Yosef actually defends them. It's that the ones who were most threatened by the children of the Pilakshim were the children of Leah, because they were trying to establish themselves as having the primary status. And then Yosef, who actually has more of a primary status because he's the favorite child, he then skips over the children of Leah, who have a good, you know, good place, and he helps the children of the Pilagshim. And when he helps the children of the Pilagshim, he's actually standing in defiance of the children of Leah, who are the ones who are really going to be hurt by this. Because again, if you think about it, Yosef's not going to lose his status as a favorite child, but by saying that everybody's equal, it's easy to say everybody's equal when you're unequal to everyone else. I'm not trying to be cynical towards Yosef, but I'm just trying to point out that by Yosef being nice to the children of the Pilagshim, he was actually declaring war on the children of Leah. And the children of Leah were the ones, according to the Midrash, who were calling them slaves. No, you're slaves because you're children of slaves, and you're children of slaves, and you don't have the same status. And Yosef said, no, we all have the same status. And of course Yosef is right. Of course Yosef agrees with Yaakov, and Yaakov agrees with Yosef, and all the 12 tribes, all of these will be 12 tribes, and Yaakov is going to treat all of these children with equality, more or less. Again, that goes back to our point in terms of Yosef. But now appreciate the irony. If the oldest children of Yaakov, namely Reuven, and then you're going to have Shimon and Levi, and they're the ones that we end up finding making the most trouble. So just in a sense, Reuven loses his status, whatever Reuven ended up doing with moving the bed or worse. Shimon and Levi lose their status because of the whole episode that takes place in Shechem, and now you're left with, by default, the fourth one, and that's Yehuda. And he easily could have lost his status as well. And the fact that Yehuda was able to come back and to say, no, tzadka mimeni, and she is right, and see his weakness, and then later really establish himself as we continue in the Yosef narrative, how Yehuda is able to stand up and to lead the brothers. He was perceived as a leader, and Yaakov appoints him as leader, and hopefully we'll come back to that as well. So now when we look at our map over here, we have on the right side what's called over here Mizrach. We have Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun. That means three children of Leah, led by Yehuda. So here we have our pure Leah camp. If we'll skip a second to the other side, you have Ephraim, Menashe, and Binyamin, which is our pure Rachel camp. So as much as you may have imagined that, you know, all of these divisions, Rachel, Leah, Bil, and Zilpah, we forgot all about these long ago, no, we didn't. It's just very obvious over here that the two camps that I'm already identifying is the non-displaced Leah camp, or the de facto Leah camp, which is, again, Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun. We have then the Rachel Camp, which is very easy to identify because there's only three of, there could have been more if we would have included the children of Bilhah, but there we see the retention of the distinction that we have three children of Rachel, and Bilhah is not considered to be the same, which goes back to my point that Yosef as a favorite child, the one who is the son of Rachel, can say, sure, we'll treat everybody equally, but now we can realize that there's going to be a lack of equality because they are still the children of Rachel, the so-called favored wife and therefore favored children. So we have pure Leah on one side, pure Rachel on the other side. So which way do you want to go now? Do you want to go in terms of Tzafon or Darom? In Tzafon, we have Dan, Asher, Naphtali. So what is the common denominator by all three of them? They're all children of Pilagshim. So now three of our four camps are very clear. Our Leah camp, our Pilagshim camp, and our Rachel camp. Unless you want to say our Rachel camp, our Leah camp, and our Pilagshim camp, again, whichever order you want to go with it, which then leaves us with our fourth camp. Our fourth camp is our displaced Leah children, and stuck together with the child of one of the Pilagshim, which right away now you realize where our trouble may begin. Was that easy enough? Yes, you see, when it's visual, it suddenly makes a lot more sense. But by the way, this is only part of the equation. There's a whole other part of the equation that we're going to need to see. And if you were to guess right now, just looking at this, you know, visually, where would we anticipate to have the most trouble from? What would your answer be? Yes, there's no question. Are you saying this because of what I just now pointed out? Because you know how the story ends up. The Reuven, Shimon, Gad is where we're going to anticipate our problems will come from. Yes? And just keep that in mind for the rest of the book of Bamidbar, because I just now ruined the whole book for you, because this is where we're going to have our problems from these tribes. There's another group that we're going to still see, but everything is completely predictable over here because of the way that the alignment is because that we have over here Reuven and Shimon losing their status as full children of Leah, as opposed to Yehudi, Yisachar, and Zvulun. And they're being thrown together with Gad. So right there, you know, you can, again, if I go back and say, well, Reuven led the charge of making fun of the children. I don't have evidence for that, by the way. If I were to, well, unless this is it. If I were to say that Reuven and Shimon led the charge in humiliating the children of Zilpah, because, again, specifically Zilpah, because Zilpah was their mother's handmaid. So therefore, who are the children of her mother's handmaid? They're slaves. So who is the first one they would call a slave? To the oldest one, and who's that? God. Well, guess who your neighbor is, right? Guess who's coming to dinner, right? Guess who the person now is that you are being put in the exact same status with. So it could very well be that just looking at the way that this division took place may give us some insight into events that took place long ago. So that's part of the issue over here. Because you say, which direction? That's the pasuk we saw before. Yehuda goes first. If you go back and look at the second part of source number one, is it there? Sorry, it's source number three. It says Yehuda's group goes first. Reuven's group goes second. Ephraim goes third, and then Dan goes last. So exactly how that happened, there is an argument, there's two different opinions in the Rishonim how that happened, and leave that for now, exactly how they marched. Source number five, in Nasad Dego Machane B'nei Dan, Ma'asaf Kol L'Machanot, that's later on we'll be told that Dan is the one who's going to come last, in case you're wondering what the formation was, the group of Dan is last, and there they described as Ma'asaf L'Kol L'Machanot. They sort of, everyone else gets sort of carried away, anybody who's left over gets carried by then. If you look at the comment of the Emek Davar, and he's not the first or the only to point this out, he just points it out over here. There's another place to have pointed it out. He writes, Masef l'kol ha-machanot l'tzivotam, mi she-nechshal v'lo yechol lechet imachaneu. What is the word nechshal? What is it? The word nechshal is actually, what? Yeah, the word, source six. The word nechshal is a word which is used by the Milchemet Amalek. Mechemet Amalek, it says that they attacked Kol HaNechashalim, which a lot of commentaries say, oh, Nechashalim means, it just inverts the letters, and I'm sorry for doing that, is HaChalashim, the weaker ones. And some commentaries point out, oh, the weaker ones spiritually. Dan itself, there's going to be some intrigue with Dan. Yes? No? There's going to be some intrigue with Dan. With Pesel Micha, correct. So it says that these are the ones who either were thrust out of the community or were too slow or the cloud didn't want them. I'm saying there's two possibilities. Is that there's a reason they can't be continued with the group because they were moving too slow, or that they were sort of michutz tamachane. They were, you know, a phrase that we're familiar with, they were kicked out of the camp. I just will point out one thing, which I'll expand a drop. And the language that the Netziv uses here is the same language as Mechemet Amalek. Because it says by Mechemet Amalek, they attacked Kol HaNechash Alim. So over here, what he's doing, and I'm saying already we've shown him do this, but he does it on this Pasuk. They do it on the Pasuk by Mechemet Amalek. So that they attack the Nechash Alim is that he understands that the Masef, the Kol HaMachanot, the Dan takes responsibility for all of those who are outside of the camp, because they're the ones who travel least. What I was going to mention about this is that those who never realized and never did the math, the war against Amalek was actually on Kaf Chet Iyar. It was on the same day that Yerushalayim was liberated. And something to pay attention to about Milchemet Amalek is that if it's true that who Amalek attacked was the weakest spiritual ones, right, the ones who were thrust out of the camp, that I think is very instructive, because we could have said as a people, as religious people, the people that just left Egypt, and therefore we left Egyptian slavery and Egyptian idolatry, and we could have said, oh, those who were thrust out of the cloud, we don't care about those people, the spiritually weak, not just the physically weak, the spiritually weak, we don't care about them, just realize we went to war because of them. Amalek attacked, and the war of Amalek is to defend those who are spiritually weakest. Because I know that in today's world, those who are spiritually weakest, the religious community has a very hard time with those who are spiritually weak. And to realize that Mechemet Amalek was that we defended those who were spiritually weak may be a very important statement. But that's part of Dan being the very last one as far as the formation goes as they travel, source 7, Yiver Shemol Shevala Ron Leymar, something I already said before. Ishal Digloba Otot, Levet Avotam Yechanu Beit Bnei Yisrael Minegid Saviv Le'Omoed Yechanu. That this is the way they're going to march, and this is the way that they're going to encamp. And it actually uses a strange term, Ba'otot Levet Avotam. Rashi here says, Le'otot Levet Avotam, Kol Degel Yelo Ot Mapatz Vu'at Liabo, that we're going to have flags. So, just to, again, going back to our flags on Yom Yerushalayim and our flags in Yom Ha'atzma'ut. So we have flags over here, which are described. The flags may be, according to Chazal, connected to the colors of the particular stones that were used on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. Tzivu shel ze, lo kitzivu shel ze, tzeva kol achad kigavan avno hakavua b'choshen. That the color of each one will be the same color as was on the Choshen. And therefore everyone's going to know their color, which by the way is just a very pragmatic, functional purpose over here, to be able to immediately recognize which group you're in. So we had those who were wearing their red t-shirts, their blue t-shirts. This is exactly what he's saying over here, because realize that there are pragmatic issues, but it's interesting that we're solving our pragmatic issues using a symbol which goes to the holy of the holies, right? It's the Choshen, the Kohen Gadol, so that just becomes interesting. Dover Acher, of course. Dover Acher, a second interpretation, Rashi says, Ba'otot Levet Avotam, Ba'ot Shemasar Lahem Yaakov Avihem, Kishinasu Mimitzrayim, Shenemar V'yasu Banav Kein Lo. So here Rashi quotes a tradition, and we'll see this midrash more in depth in a moment. Rashi quotes a midrash that says that the Otot Lebeit Avotam was a sign which was given by their fathers. This was already, what did he say? Yaakov Avihim already gave this to them. Ve'yasu banav lo kasher tzivam, and his children did as Yaakov commanded. Yehuda v'Yisachar zvulun yasu min haMizrach, Reuven Shimon Gad min haDarom, ki de'ita b'Tanchuma b'Parshazu. Rashi quotes the Midrash Tanchuma, and therefore we will look in the Tanchuma in a moment. But Rashi's telling us that the vision that took place that we just spent a couple of minutes trying to understand, it goes all the way back to Yaakov. And I'm going to say it again now, that Yaakov is the one who says, oh, Reuven and Shimon, you're together with God. Yehuda, you're with Yisachar and Zvulun. B'nai Rachel over here, B'nai rest of the Pilag Shim over there, that's already Yaakov's division. There's another element, though, to all of this that I want to point out, and then we're going to look in the Midrash, and then we'll try to, we'll try to figure out where the Midrash got it from. So that those are the stages that we need to accomplish. There's a whole other level to this that sometimes we don't pay as much attention to. We do pay attention to the way that the tribes are formatted, but there's actually another formatting over here, if that's the right word. There's another division that takes place that we're far less interested in, at least generally. Source number 9. V'yu Eila b'nei Levi b'shmotam. So after Levi was left out, so let me tell you who Levi is anyway. So who are Levi's children? Gershon, Kahat, Umerori. So there are three divisions of Levi. Levi divides into three. Gershon, Kahat, Umerori. Okay? Keep in mind those three, because it's the only three you need to remember. V'eila shmot b'nei Gershon. B'nei Gershon has, who are they? B'nei Kahat l'mishpachotam, Amram v'Yitzar, Chevron v'Uziel. So, who are their children? Their children are Kahat, and then Amram, Yitzar, Chevron. Now, of these, who do we recognize? So, Yitzar, Chevron, and Uziel, you don't pay any attention to. The others you do, because of certain famous children that they may have had. So, who do you want to start with? Amram? Okay, so are we aware, are we familiar with any children of Amram? Yes. Good, Moshe and Aaron. There was a girl, I think there was a girl also, right? Okay. And we have Kahat. Did Kahat have any famous descendants? Korach. Okay, good. But by the way, notice a second, who is the firstborn? Apparently the firstborn is Kahat. So therefore, if we're still going to be troubled about our double portions and so on, and by the way, the whole subtext to the section with the Levian is going to be taking the place of the firstborn, and there's going to be some interesting dynamics about how they take place of the firstborn. One of the mysteries which is solved along the way is that there will be some B'nai Levi who are in themselves firstborn. That's, again, I'm just pushing that aside, but that's something which will be noted. And as we, Gershon is the whole, Gershon Kahatu Merari. Right, sorry, Gershon Kahatu Merari. But Kahat himself has Amram as a child. Right. So without going through all the names, Mishpachat HaGershoni Acharei HaMishkan Yachanu Yama. The children from Gershon, they're going to be on the side which is called Yama. Which side is Yama? Towards the Yam. Which is?
West.
It depends where you're standing. Okay, good. And then it's going to go into their task, what they do, which we're going to skip. Ula kahat, mishpachat ha'amrami. I'm in Pasuk Kaf Zayin in Source 9. So here we have kahat and amram, yitzari and so on. Mishpachat kahat yachanu yerech mishchan temana. So kahat is going to be on that side, and then continue and says what their tasks are. Unisi pasuk lamed bet unisi nisiei halevi Elazar ben Aaron Kohen. Their nasi, just in case you never noticed that Levi also has a nasi. What was the function of the nasi till now? To be able to help in the counting. And who is the nasi? Elazar ben Aaron Kohen. And it goes into what their job is. But then it says unisi beit admishka moritz Uriel ben Avichael. Right, they'll be on the side Tzifona. Now, at the end there, it will tell the Mirari will be Kedma. Now, in case I just now confused you completely, take a look at your map again, or your picture again. On the bottom this time, on the right side, you have the Mishkan in the middle. On the left, Ma'arav, B'nei Gershon, Safon, north, B'nei Mirari, south, B'nei Kahat, and then you have a very interesting group on the right side, which consists of the family of Amram, Moshe and Aaron Uvanav. So over here, even though I told you that Levi had three children, the three children get divided into four. How do the three get divided into four? So just again to point out, this does sound like a firstborn being rewarded by getting a double portion. Correct. And if it was already going to be the Kahatim, then which family of Kahat should have received So we realize that something is going on over here. So all that I want you to now do, and I actually tried to do this, I did not succeed in doing this, is taking that smaller map and sticking it into the bigger one. So now to imagine not just where the 12 tribes are, but where the four parts of Levi are compared to the 12 tribes. And now we realize that the Bnei, okay, I don't know which way you want to go. You have Moshe, Aaron, Uvanov together with Yehudi, Yisachar, and Zvulun. Which means now you realize that on that side of the Mishkan, you now have what would be the strongest in terms of leadership, the strongest in terms of every level of leadership. You have Yehuda, who will be king, and you have together there Moshe, and you have together there Aaron, Kohen Gadol, and their children, all the Kohanim. All of those are aligned with Yehudi, Yisachar, and Zvulun, and they're the ones who go first, and so on. On the other hand, you also notice now that together with our most problematic group, which is Reuben, Shimon, and Gad, who do we have there? We have Kahat and Korach, this other group which is problematic, and that is already, of course, the problem is, what's the cause and what's the, I mean, do you take all your problems and throw them together, or is the problems fester because you have two problematic groups, or was one primarily problematic and the other one becomes problematic because of the being next to another? Bnei Gershon. What was Gershon? Gershon was the firstborn. Yes? So who do they get put next to? They get put next to Yosef, who is the firstborn. So right there you have something interesting in terms of the way that we have our division over here. We have greatness on one side, firstborn on the other side, even though we always would have suspected that they may have gone together. But Yosef, who gets rewarded as a firstborn, and therefore it turns into Ephraim, Menashe, and Benjamin, firstborn, right next to them is the Kohen, the Levi, who is the firstborn, who is Bnei Gershon, gets placed next to them, and you realize that they may both have something in common and may feel very good about their encampment being next to one another, and then we're left off with our default, which is the last one, which is Bnei Merari, are thrown together with our Bnei Plakshim, Dan, Asher, and Nephtali. So I just hope that this visual now already gave us a little bit of insight. As I said, I still want to try it. We're going to look at the Midrash now, but at least now we'll understand the Midrash, but then I ultimately want to try to figure out where the Midrash got it from. Correct. And that's part of what, once you see it, then suddenly a whole other level of interpretation presents itself, because, you know, when we read the words, we don't pay attention. But when you actually are visualizing this, then we see something else. So let's now... so okay, good. Okay, I'm going to come back to that as well. So, I think we have everything in order now. We can look at source number 10, which should be of no surprise to you. V'yikach Korach, Ben Yitzar, Ben Kahat, Ben Levi. Yes, and who does he take? Vidatan, Vaviram, Ben Eliyah, V'om Ben Pelet, Ben Reuven. So what we have is our problematic group right over there. Rashi then points out and says, source 11, V'lo Yizkir Ben Yaakov, but it doesn't mention Ben Yaakov, it doesn't go all the way far back as Yaakov, Shabikesh Rachamim Al Atzmo, Shelo Yizkor Shemo Al Machlokotam, Shenemar B'Kahalam Al Tichad Kvodi. In their Kahal, because it says they gather together, in their Kahal, I don't want to be mentioned at all. And so on. Continue in Rashi. Datan Vaviram Bishvil Shah Shevet Ruvain Sharoi Bhaniyatam Temana Shachin Lekahat Uvanav Hachonim Temana. So here Rashi says, goes right out and says it. He says that this coalition of Korach and the children of Ruvain came because they lived right next to one another. Little later on, Rashi goes so far as to say, where it's bolded later on towards the bottom, Ruban, it says 250 men, Ruban Mishevet Ruvain Shechinav, and so on. That most of the 250, Rashi says, there are others who will say all 250, but Rashi says this whole Korach rebellion is this one grouping over here of those who are parked next to one another. And now let's take a look at the Medrash Tanchuma, which Rashi referenced before. Ishal Diglo. Source 12. Lo yatzarich lomar ele ish al diglo yachanu bnei Yisrael. Omat hamaloma ba'otot. Right, there's like signs. Ela b'shashin iftar Yaakov avinu min olam. Omar levana v'shachanti im avotai. Chazar al kol banav uberachan upoktan. That who came to Yaakov's deathbed, he gives all of his children blessings, which we know is a little problematic, whether he actually blessed them all. Some of these blessings sounds like a euphemism, Lashon Sagi Nahar. Ufokdam, and he gives them instructions. Omer lahem kishetitlu oti, biyiru v'chavotlu oti. When you carry me out, do it with proper respect. V'lo yiga adam acher b'nitati, and don't let anyone else touch the coffin. V'lo achad min ha-mitzrim, and none of the Egyptians. V'lo achad mi-bneichem, not any of your children. B'nei she'yesh b'chem she'nasam mi-benot Kanan, because some of your children married some of the local Canaanites. I don't want anyone else touching my coffin. Yaakov says, only you. V'chein hu omar v'yesu b'nav lo kasher tzivam. And his children did as he instructed. V'yesu oto b'nav atzar Kanan, and it says, and his children carried him. V'lo b'nei b'nav. Doesn't say his grandchildren did. By the way, there will be an exception to this, which we'll see in a moment. V'hech tzivan, and how did he order them? Amar lahem Yehuda v'yisachar zvulun yita'anu mitati min ha-mizrach. V'ruvin shimun v'gad yita'anu min ha-darom. Dan v'asher v'naftali yita'anu min ha-tzafon. V'nyanin Ephraimu min ha-sheh, there you have your grandchildren, yita'anu min ha-ma'arav. So therefore, this formation that we find in the desert, according to this midrash, already goes back to Yaakov. Yosef? No, Yosef is left out. But I can say Yosef's not left out, because Yosef actually is there twice. But the Midrash says, Yosef al yiton lama shehu melech. V'tem tzrichim lechlok lo kavod. Yosef needs to be respected, because Yosef is a melech. Which means Yosef is too holy. Levi al yiton, and now it's interesting where Levi got left out. Lama shatidin lisa et aharon, because they're going to carry the ark. By the way, you notice that the same formation with the ark in the middle, and Levi doesn't carry the ark, therefore he can't carry this coffin. Can't become Tameh. Tameh met. Umisha toenet arino shel chai holamim lo yisa arino shel met. Who, that Levi who's going to carry the Aron, which means the Aron in the Mishkan, with the Luchot, should not carry someone who's dead. Vim tasu kain, uta'anatem et mitati kashem shel tziveti etchem. You should do this the way that I command you. Kodesh Baruch Hu atid lashrot etchem degalim degalim. And in the future, God will create for you, now just use the word degalim, which I'll say is groups. Kevan shiniftar, when he died, tanu oto kishem shetiva shetu oto, and they did it as he instructed. Man, how do we know? Sheken kativ v'yisubo banav lo kasher tzivam. Because it says, they did as he commanded. Which, by the way, the pshat, he asked them to bury me in Israel. That's the pshat. But the Midrash understands not just to bury, but the exact formation that they were in when they carried him out. Miktiv acharav, certainly not min ktiv acharav yisu oto b'nav artzar kanan kevin sheyitzu yisroim mitzrayim amakadosh baruch hu oreya sha'ash yasu derlim kishem shebisran avihim. When they left Egypt, God says to Moshe that you need to go into the formations that Yaakov already had said. Shehim atitim lasto degalim degalim. Because Yaakov already said, in the future you're going to break into groups. B'yad amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe Moshe. Asay otam degalim l'shmi. Put them in their groups. B'yad amad Moshe v'tchil meitzari. Moshe got a little agitated. Amar achshav atitam achloket. He goes, okay, now we're going to have a fight. How am I going to put people in different groups? How do we divide them? Dinatein ben hashvatim. Imam l'shevi Yehuda l'shot b'mizrach umer li yafshili ela b'darom. You know Jews. You're going to tell Yehuda, you're on one side, so I want to be on the other side. V'chein acharim kiyotzi v'shevet v'shevet. Amar lo kodesh baruch hu Moshe. Machbat lecha. Moshe. What do you care? Lo, this doesn't mean machbat lecha. Him einam tzrichim lecha b'devar zeh. Moshe, this is not about you. Rather, they don't need you for this. Shemi atzma hi makirim diratan. Because everyone knows their proper place. Lama? Shetzava'at avihim biyadam. They have their father's will in their hands. Heichlasherot pidegalim, how to divide into the camps. Eini mechadesh aleim devar. I'm not telling them anything new. Shekrayesh them tkasim min Yaakov aviyam. They already have the instructions. Kishem shekpidu et mitato kach shekifu et mitato kach yakifu et hamishkan. The same way they surrounded Yaakov's coffin, they will surround the Mishkan. Minayin shekachtiv ish al diglo, each person on his proper degel. That's what it is. Ketzad him shruyim halevim yechanu saviv lemishkan edut. Moshe v'Aaron v'Nav v'Mizrach shenemar v'chonim lefnei Mishkan kedma shemrim mishmeret hamikdash usmechim lam Yehuda v'Yisar uzvulon. And next to them will be this group of Yehuda. Mikan amru ashrei letzadik v'ashrei l'shchinav. that, again, this group is going to be the really positive group, the group of that we've seen, which is really the group of Moshe, Aaron, and Kohanim next to Yehudi, Yisachar, and Zvulun. Eilu shloshet tofshim sheim smuchim l'Moshe v'Aaron, nasu gdolim b'Torah. These tribes that were next to Moshe and Aaron, they're the ones who came great. Yehuda sheneimar lo yosur shevet miyudam uchit miben raglav. But it's interesting. They became great. That was all there already before. And let's pay attention to this, and I'll come back to this. B'Yisachar k'tiv v'nei Yisachar yodei bina le'itim l'dat ma'yaseh Yisrael, implying that Pasuk in Divrei Yamim is that this tribe of Yisachar were ones who became teachers, rabbis, melamdim. V'him asmechim b'halacha al pihen. Uzvulun moshchim b'shevet sofer, al shayu shchenav. Kulam nasu b'nei Torah. Here's a nice term. Here you hear it used in the Midrash. They all became b'nei Torah. This whole group. Umina Darom, but on the other hand, in the south, b'nei ha-kahat, usmuchin amr'uvim v'shimun v'gag, mikan amr'u oy l'rasha oy l'shcheno. Woe unto a wicked person and woe unto their neighbors. Eilu shloshet avshim shayu shchenim l'korach v'adato b'darom. And so on and so forth. And let's try to figure out, as I said, where this midrash is getting it from. And there's really two possibilities. One possibility is that this is a Masorah. This is exactly what happened. We have no other way of explaining this and say this is a Masorah, that Yaakov actually told his children this. On the other hand, you can say that what Yaakov said to his children was, bury me in Egypt, and everything else is, but don't bury me in Egypt, bury me in Israel, and everything else is part of the Midrashic imagination as far as what happens later on is predicated on what had happened before. But let's just think about what we know, and I've already given you lots and lots of hints along the way. One thing that Yaakov does do prior to dying, if we go back to his instructions then, is, well, let's look at 13. Here we have, again, the so-called brachot. He does not give a bracha to Reuven. Reuven b'chori atach chiv rashit oni yeser seit v'yeter oz. Pachas kemayim al totar. You will not be in the position of leadership. Which means Reuven is displaced. Now, the displacement of Reuven here, the only question is, so who's going to take his place? Who will be the leader? And that we're going to learn a little bit later on if we skip to Pasuk. Lo yosor shevet miyuda mechokek miben raglav. Yehuda will be made the leader. Which means, without my even saying that Yaakov actually created these formations in a literal sense, but Yaakov did, in a conceptual sense, create who will be leader, because he appointed the leader. He said, Yehuda, you will be leader. Which means that when it comes time in the desert to put them in the proper way and realize it was God who tells Moshe, this is how you do this. But what we have over here, maybe this sounds a little funny, but we have God obeying Yaakov's bracha, as it were, or Yaakov's bracha at that point was based upon insight, prophetic insight, of understanding about how things are going to play out in the future. So therefore, Reuven gets pushed aside. But let's continue back from the beginning by Pasuk Hei, Shimon and Levi. Shimon v'Levi achim, klei chamas mecharotayim, bisodam al tavo nafshi, bikolam al techad kvodi, ki bapam hargu ish, uvetzan ikrushor. Whether this is referring to what they plotted against Yosef, or whether it's referring to Shechem, is argued among the Midrashim and the Rishonim. Arur apam ki az vervatam ki kashata achal kem bi Yaakov afitzem bi Israel. I'm going to divide them. Now, it could be that we never thought about this prior to today, that we always would imagine that dividing means that Shimon and Levi get separated, and they do. Shimon and Levi are not next to one another. But who is the one who really does get divided completely? It's Levi. Levi is the one who's, meaning they're separated, but when you read this pasuk, and it says, again, Achalkim b'Yaakov v'afitzim b'Yisrael, and I'm going to spread them out among Israel, and then we go back to our map, and we see how Levi is broken up in different ways. We now realize this is part of what Yaakov is saying as well. Of course, later on in the future, Levi will have no land, and Levi will live in different places, but already in the marching formation in the desert, Levi is not one group. Levi is divided, again, next to each one of these different groups together. And the way that they're divided, of course, where's all the problem going to come? This is what's funny. I don't know, it's funny. Where's the problem going to come? The place that Shimon and Levi are actually next to one another, that's the place we're going to get our problems. Because Shimon and Levi can't be next to one another, but you have to put somebody over there, and I'll say it again. Shimon and Levi, if we go through all of our problems in the desert, this group, And eventually you know that Reuven and Gad are the ones who are not even going to want to come into the land of Israel afterwards. They're the ones who are going to want to stay on the other side. If you go through all of Sefer Bamidbar, the hints of all the problems we're going to have is already given over here, be it the part of Levi which is next to Reuven and Shimon, or Reuven and Shimon and Gad who are next to Levi. This is exactly where our problems are. Yaakov says, no, we need to divide them up, and the other ones that are divided up end up working out okay. But the other thing that Yaakov had done is, if we look at source number 14, when Yaakov speaks to Yosef, he says, "Vatashnei vanecha noladim lacha be'eretz Mitzrayim, ad bo yalecha Mitzrayim alihem, Ephraim u'menashe k'ruvein v'shimon yuli." He goes, no, these two, Ephraim and Manasseh, will be like Reuven and Shimon. And you know, when you first hear it, they'll be like Reuven and Shimon, great, they'll have the status of the Shvatim. But then you have to say, why do you have to say those two Shvatim? Couldn't you pick better Shvatim? And so let's just think about this for 1 second, exactly what this is saying. What this is saying to Yosef is that Yosef is getting a double portion. Which means the fact that Yosef is removed from this equation, yes, according to Midrash, Yosef is a king and Yosef is not going to touch the Aron, but what it's really coming down to, again, is something which Yaakov said. Yaakov says to Yosef that, Yosef, you are going to get a double portion over here. And the double portion that he's going to receive is going to cause Yosef not to be there, or Yosef is there twice. Yosef is there both as Ephraim and in Menashe. But it's interesting, and again, slight subtext, that Yosef's Ephraim and Menashe are not like Yehuda. Right? That's what's interesting. They're not like Yehuda. They're not like Yehuda and Yisachar, which probably would have sounded a little awkward anyway. You're like Reuven and Shimon, which are the first two. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they end up being in the primary leadership position. They end up being in an equal position to Reuven and Shimon. And again, just to keep in mind over here, to ask the simple question. This whole division in the desert that we're finding, this whole formation, where does it come from? And the answer is, it comes from Yaakov. That's the answer. It comes from Yaakov. Now the only question is how you understood that answer. Is it, as the Midrash tries to put it, in a literal sense that Yaakov says, this is exactly the way that you must be? Or is it just following all the instructions that Yaakov actually gave? When Yaakov is saying to give Yosef a double portion, so now I have Ephraim and Menashe. Okay? And by the way, when I have Ephraim and Menashe, something else happens. Because if my end number is 12, I now have 13. So now I have to take somebody away. Now, taking somebody away becomes very, very scary. Because if you take somebody away, does that mean they lose a status whatsoever? But what do you need to do instead? You need to kick them up a little bit and give them a better status, and that ends up happening to Levi. But why does it happen to Levi? Because, again, it goes back to Yaakov. We need to take Levi, and we need to divide Levi up. Because when Levi gets divided up, Levi's going to be okay. The problem with Levi is when Levi's together with Shimon, and that's exactly what we're seeing over here. So therefore, the words of Yaakov going through Parshat Vayechi, again, that's, if you want to understand the beginning of Bamidbar, look at the end of Bereishit. You want to understand exactly what takes place over here in terms of all of Sefer Bamidbar, then pay attention to what Yaakov says. Which means that there seems to be something really quite prophetic about Yaakov's deathbed, quote-unquote, brachot, but that seems to be exactly what's going on, to the extent that the Midrash is willing to say, no, literally, Yaakov says, divide them like this. So as I said, if one wants to take it literally, that's fine. But if one wants to take it conceptually, that's also fine, because it's the words of what Yaakov says, and it's amazing to what extent that this exactly not only dictates the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar in terms of how they set up, but it actually dictates the entire book of Bamidbar and all the problems that we're going to meet along the way in terms of the righteous and so on. So now, of course, you can ask yourself, is this because, what's the cause and what's the effect? That's really, I guess, what it comes down to the question. Is what's the cause and what's the effect? It's because that these people are negative? I mean, that's what I asked you before, okay? I know that that's going to be the problematic one. Is it because they're problematic, or they're problematic because of the way that they were put together? Does Yaakov see this? Does Moshe see this? Does God see this? Well, of course God sees this, but now the question, as I said again, do we just take all of our problems and throw them in one place and then just let it fester and let whatever comes out? Or is this something, you know, based upon divine wisdom and prophecy? So the distinction of Levi and why they end up getting what they get seems to us to be far more connected to events that took place in the desert, including not being included in the, shall we say, in the sin of the golden calf. That's really where we see Mila Shemelai. And we don't realize the echoes of that. Mila Shem Elai, and they end up joining. But Yaakov already said to divide them. Again, we don't know how that's going to play out. Yaakov says divide them, separate them, and then also sprinkle them around. And the other thing which is interesting over here is the three families of Levi becoming four different groups. That's also interesting, because then there's also a double portion along the way over there that gets awarded. So all that I'm pointing out is that, you know, sometimes we carry with us issues that took place hundreds of years before. It could be issues of inheritance and perceived slighting and what we deserved or misbehavior, but all of this seems to be playing itself out very, very clearly over here. The Midrash says the following. The Midrash says, A, that Shevet Levi was never enslaved. They never enslaved also means they never served Avodah Zarah. They were never part of that Egyptian experience. They were the ones who taught Torah along the way, and it's one of the many Midrashim that the Rambam brings down as fact as Halacha, which is interesting. So therefore, Levi already, according to this, gets... Levi changes already in Egypt, which is it's really answering a question. Why was Levi different? Why does Moshe come from Levi? I will point out that when it comes to this idea that Levi should not carry the Aron, it is Moshe who does take the remains of Yosef out. And that I do think is connected to all of this, but we'll leave it at that.